Mercy Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or the Catholic Church. Today, my visitor is Catherine Gillis. Catherine, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you. How are you?
Catherine Gillis is a trained chartered accountant and an experienced post-abortion counselor. She is currently also the chair of the Diocesan Human Life Committee. I interviewed her last year when a change to the abortion law was looming. We are now getting closer to the time of the final readings of the suggested abortion legislation bill at Parliament. Catherine, in our last interview a few months ago, you called our listeners to write submissions to the Select Committee. Do you have any information on the number and quality of submissions that were received?
Yes, Beate. First, we'd like to thank all of those listeners who did put in submissions. We're really impressed. We got over 25,000, and we only had 6 weeks to put those together. So that's been an overwhelming result. Unfortunately, there were 2,890 people who wanted to do oral submissions, and only 150 of those were allowed to. So that was incredibly disappointing. Of the people who did do oral submissions, there was a variety from both sides of the issue who presented, and some of them were very, very impressive. We had people who are very experienced in the field with decades of knowledge, and then we had young, bright academics who just, even me listening to them, I was blown away at the depth of their knowledge. So, and then there were just young people who were just deeply, deeply concerned about the inequality of this bill.
Yeah. Could you listen to the submissions, the oral submissions? Were you allowed to be there?
Oh, well, you could. Some of them were in private. Some of them were deeply sensitive, obviously, because of the issue. But many of them were broadcast, and that made a huge difference around the country because lots of people would go onto Facebook and watch them. So that made people feel very involved and far more aware. So we're quite lucky from that point of view that it's so open to the public now that people get a chance to go back and listen again and again. So if you haven't heard them, I would advise you to go onto the Facebook page and watch some of those submissions, because there really are some impressive people, especially from the medical profession.
So that link to the Facebook page, is that the Facebook page of the government?
It's a Parliament, yes, Select Committee on Abortion. Yeah, they've got their own link.
And you said 25,000 submissions.
Yes, those are the written ones.
And these are in favour and against.
Yeah, that's right. And so the interesting thing is as well, because it's such a sensitive issue, many of them won't have any name attached to them, because if there's anything that might be remotely able to identify somebody in, then they've been marked as being anonymous submission. So even if the person wanted them to be by their own name, they've been marked as anonymous. And, you know, it is an incredibly sensitive issue, so you can see why the government have chosen to do that.
Yeah, and you don't know how the percentage is of against and pro. Oh,
I'm sorry, I can't. I should have got that for you before I came in.
Well, we can add that in the information on the Facebook link. And for those of you who have just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk. Or visit our website or Facebook page at Te Ngaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Centre. My visitor today is Catherine Gillis. Catherine is the chair of the Human Life Committee and does abortion counselling, and we're just talking about the submissions that have been received regarding the new bill about the end of life. Catherine, can you summarize the main changes, just because it's been a while, and maybe you can just summarize the main changes that would be in place if the suggested bill becomes law.
So one of the main important points is that they want to remove it from the Crimes Act, and there's a huge amount of misinformation and misunderstanding out there, because the Present Crimes Act has a clause in there that specifies that the woman and the girl can never be charged over an abortion. The Crimes Act, it's in there to protect people from doctors who are working unprofessionally, or people supplying drugs unprofessionally. And that does happen. We know of those things happening. So there's a lot of misinformation. The other thing is that they're going to remove the need to get referrals from consultants up to 20 weeks. Now, at the moment, in the Act that's been in place for 40 years, there are abortions allowed under certain circumstances up to 20 weeks. Now, this new legislation they're talking about bringing in will make it that you don't need doctors involved whatsoever. And then, with doctors' referrals, you can have it right up to birth. Now, that's a horrendous situation to be able to have an abortion up to birth.
In 20 weeks, that's 5 months. So many children are born at the with 5 months.
Yes, we know that around the world, there are children who are viable around that 19 to 23 weeks. So, and medicine is advancing all the time, technology is advancing, and that age lowers and lowers. And it's really interesting, this is a little bit of a side, but a lot of the medical people, abortionists, who have turned from doing abortions to becoming pro-life have been because they've been doing an abortion, a late-term abortion, in one room, and then they go and see a patient in another room and they realise the two babies are of the same gestation period, and they realise, well, that's just not right, you know? Especially when you're around that 23, 24 weeks period.
Yeah.
About 10, 12 years ago, there was a letter that went to in Canterbury, and it was complaining about the number of late abortions at that stage were about 18 weeks, and how much stress that was causing on the medical profession, the nurses and people who are working in that area. And that's an area that people often ignore, that those medical practitioners who have to help in abortions, and even the other people, you know, the people who are cleaning up the sluice room, those people who have to be a part of this is hugely detrimental to them and their spirit, their soul, because it is soul-destroying work, especially when, you know, you're trying to cope with a termination at that late stage. And it's really in your face.
And it's almost like a birth for the mother too, isn't it?
Yes, it can be. Certainly it can be, certainly when they get to late term. It's a fairly horrendous process when it's a late term.
Mm.
And I've counselled some girls with those late-term abortions in Auckland, and they really, really grieve them. They really
what
do.
Is the reason why why the suggestion came up in the first place to allow it until 20 weeks? That's a long time.
20 weeks, it's always been 20 weeks, but with doctor's consent, but, you know. But overseas, the drive has been that there should be no doctor's involved whatsoever, that it's just purely a woman's right. And so that's what they're pushing for now in New Zealand. But the whole full term thing, that's also been a move to get that overseas as well. So we're part of it's part of a worldwide push, you know, and it's really just ignoring the rights of the unborn child altogether.
And what are the other changes that are suggested?
Well, they're talking about with the medical professionals who don't want to be involved, that they can just refer to someone else. Well, that's still abhorrent to anyone who's a medical professional and opposed to this situation. They do not want to be involved in any way whatsoever. So, you know, they've got to tighten up those laws. One of the advantages, if it does come under the Health Act, is that it would enforce the rule of informed consent, because at the moment there is no informed consent. And it's probably the only medical procedure where people don't get true informed consent. And informed consent, believe me, I always think, well, I say often, that if people knew I know about abortion, if they saw the impact on people's lives, that long-term impact, they'd never suggest it for anyone they loved. And
so informed consent is that the doctor tells the patient about any side effects, is that right?
Yes, all the long-term impacts. Yeah, so it's not necessarily the doctor, sometimes it's just the counsellor. But at the moment, and the other thing that might come in, we really hope that they would have independent counselling, because at the moment, when the counselling is done within the abortion clinic, really those women, their jobs are dependent on abortions going through. That's the sales path. And if you watch that movie Unplanned, that's a really good indicator of how important it is for them to get them through the process to cross the line. Sorry, that is the accountant in me speaking. Yeah. You know, but also I've dealt with girls who have been told they're pregnant at family planning and then go basically get booked for their abortion straight away. They have no time to consider their consequences. And once they make that booking, it's really, really hard for them to change their mind, because their peace of mind has come from the very fact that they've made a decision. They're not caught in that place of indecision. But what they really need is someone independent of them and their circumstances, sometimes outside their family, to just talk to them about all their options and open their mind to their options and bring them to a place of calmness outside of that initial panic of, my life is over, what about my plans, what am I going to do? And just help them to see the options ahead of them. And it just changes their whole world, changes their future.
Mm. And it changes the future in any ways.
Oh, well, that's it. Both choices are difficult, yeah. But certainly one is more difficult than the other.
Why is it called liberalising the abortion law? What does that mean?
Well, it's quite, that what they're saying is it makes it easier for the woman to get an abortion. But, you know, that's also like saying you could ride on your motorbike with no helmet. That's more fun, but it doesn't necessarily mean the impact's the best for you, you know.
It's a good comparison.
Or not, yeah, or kids without safety helmets, yeah. You know, seatbelts, things like that. This is it's a terrible situation for the unborn child, but it's absolutely a terrible situation for the woman, because the long-term impacts are, they're well documented. There's been many studies all over the world, really huge studies, 877,000 some of them, and some of them over 1 million women, when they put them all together in mega studies, and the evidence is certainly on the weight of it being a bad health choice. So, you know, that it go into the health system is ridiculous, because it's not a good, healthy option for anyone to take anyway. But unfortunately, it's such a hard issue. There's so much deep emotion on it. And unfortunately, when people in the early stages of any grief, denial and anger are often part of that normal grief process. So many people just get trapped there. And then part of the healing is they accommodate, they make, well, I couldn't have, if I hadn't done this, I wouldn't be where I am today. And that's actually not yet a healthy place. Like the lady with the Golden Globe Award the other day, you know, if I hadn't had my abortion, I wouldn't be where I am today. Well, actually, that's not a healthy state of mind yet. She's still in her grieving process, even though, but that could have been held up because with the years of denial. The healthy process is being able to grieve it and yet go on with your life without having to make excuses. And being at peace with it. And being at peace is just such an important thing for them to move forward.
And with all your experience in post-abortion counselling, have you also had some feedback from families who were in favour or against? Because yes. The child doesn't belong to the mother only. It belongs to the whole family, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's so true, Beate. And very often, you know, you do get quite involved with the extended family, and often it's the family who've called you in, and family can be contacting 5 years, you know, the parents 5 years later, and, you know, worrying about the situation and grieving the grandchild they lost. And yeah, certainly the people I study with overseas, they look at that intergenerational trauma and the correlation between that, and they've got lots of evidence. So, you know, you have the damaged maternal instinct of the woman who had the termination, and then that impacts on the way she mothers her children, and then that impacts on how those young girls become mothers themselves, and so that impacts. So it's certainly a cyclical thing, and certainly I've been doing it so many years now that I am seeing those multi-generational things, and some other people I counsel have it through the generations. It was interesting as well, people forget about the whole question of coercion, and over the years with doing the pregnancy counselling side, it wasn't uncommon for us to get girls who mum and grandma have had abortions and want them to have abortion, them to have an abortion too. And they actually just want to keep their baby, but they've got to do it almost away from the influence of mum and grandma because that's already been the cycle. So it's not free choice, you know. Most women who come grieving an abortion, they don't do it because they really wanted to. They feel like they had no other choice, and that's the tragedy of all of this. They're talking about liberalisation of the abortion law, but they're not actually looking at what is best. And the best thing is to be able to give people in this situation better options, you know, where they can make wise choices that are positive and life-affirming for them and good for their confidence and their ego, and good for their soul as they go through their life.
So where do the women go when they are thinking about it? Do they know about you and your counselling services? Are there more counselling services in Auckland, for example?
Yes, there's pregnancy counselling, there's pregnancy help in the middle of the city, there's Family Life International, they've got Gianna's Choice. There's a lovely place called Janine's Place. She puts people up for accommodation. There's places out west. There's a great organisation called Thrive, which do specialise in teenage pregnancies. You know, there's plenty of agencies out there, and there's also there are always people out there who are willing to help, you know. But it would be far better if more people in the community would step up and let people know that they are there for them, because people think the right thing to do is just not be involved and let them make their own choices, but people actually need people to stand with them and help them.
And the fact that there are so many different organisations shows that there is a need,
yes,
of support for women who, yeah, are thinking about what to do.
Yeah, and encouragement.
So the submissions are done, so there are no more time of the submissions. And what is the next step in the select committee? What are they doing now?
Well, the select committee, we're expecting them back between the 11th and the 20th of February to give their report. And then, because this is a government bill, there won't be the great big long process we had with the euthanasia, because it was a private member's bill. So this is quite likely to be rushed through. You know, it was a very sad situation. It was 94-23, the vote on the bill. So people very much have believed that lie, that the Crimes Act says that the woman is a criminal, which is a tragic lie, and it's going to harm us in the end. But anyway, we're expecting that to be rushed through Parliament. You know, there has been very little discussion on it at Parliament level. It's just incredible. People have done a lot of work researching what they want to put in, and there's very little discussion on it. And if you, I don't know if you got a chance to watch the parliamentary debates, I often watch them at nights, and nobody there. These are our paid professionals, our MPs, and the House is about a third full for these really important issues. It's just tragic. But people have made their mind up beforehand. But look, what we would like people to do, if you want government to understand that you do care about this issue and that you don't believe that abortions should be legal up to 20 weeks without a doctor being involved and should be allowed up to 40 weeks, and we can assume that it'll be the same easy process to get them up to 40 weeks, well, please look, consider coming along to our March for Life at the end of February. We've got a March for Life in Auckland, 29th of February. We start at 1 o'clock in Freyberg Square in the centre of the city. We're going to march just up to Aotea Square at 2 o'clock, and we'll have a few speeches afterwards. So it's only 2 or 3 hours of your
time.
Which
date is it?
29th of February.
Saturday. This is Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's about 3 hours of your time, and it'd be just fantastic to have a good crowd of people there.
So it's in the city centre?
Yes, the city centre.
And yeah, starts at 2 p.m.
Yeah, so the march is at 2 p.m., but there'll be some performances by youth groups beforehand.
Yeah.
And then the speeches will be at Aotea Square. And it's a family-friendly day. We don't want any problems. We don't want aggressiveness. We just want people to go out and have a joyous celebration of life. But we also want to give the message that we're not okay with this. This is not what we want in New Zealand.
And as you say, if it's only one third of the parliamentarians who are present at the discussion, I think that if you have a lot of people, then at least whatever they decide, at least they should do an informed decision, just like the woman should be able to do.
And they should realise, you know, that the studies have been done in New Zealand. Family First did some wonderful work a couple of years ago, and the results were just amazing. Most people didn't want the abortion laws changed. Yeah.
And that was a few years ago.
Yeah. There was about 76% wanted safeguards against coercion, because people know there's coercion out there. So 78% wanted freedom for the medical profession, because people understand that if you've gone into medicine, you've gone in there to help people, not to damage them. And lots of the doctors who are against this are against it because they are seeing the patients come back later, you know, with depression and anxiety, suicidal thoughts, those kind of things.
Yeah. And as you say, the doctors, when they see the baby being delivered, and it would be livable.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's plenty of cases where they have been born alive and they've survived, you know. So it's not a good step for society. It's a terrible indictment on us that this is the option that people feel they have to do to fulfil their dreams, you know. And the other thing they're not talking about is they're not talking about the impact on the fathers. They don't have any rights, and they really deserve to, because they suffer as well. It's their child too, and they suffer after
a loss. The fathers and the whānau, the family, who is
the father of the baby. Yeah. That was how I first got involved. It was a young man crying over his abortion 4 years previously. And people forget that the denial about the pain can last for decades, you know. They just pull that pain somewhere else.
Yeah. So the 29th of February?
Yes, please. Please come. Come one, come all.
That's Saturday.
Yep.
And so the gathering is at the Freiburg Square in the CBD.
Yes.
And there will be speeches, and but it's all a day of harmony. It's not a day.
Oh, absolutely! We want harmony. There's enough heartache about this issue, and that's why things get so aggressive, unfortunately, because people are really hurting. They're really, really hurting, and they're going to feel guilty about what's happened, regardless of what the legislation says. We can't stop them feeling guilty. They can come from it. We could give them post-abortion counselling, and healing can come, but it's got to be true, in-depth healing. And a lot of people are really hurting about this issue. And that's what makes so many of us hesitant, because most of us will have family members or friends who have had abortions, and we don't want to look like we're pointing the finger at them. We don't want to look like we're saying they're bad people or anything like that. Most of these people choose it because they feel like they had no other choice, or they're just in panic.
Who's the organiser of the event? Is it the Human Life Committee, or is it the...
What's happened is we've got a group of people. It started at the university last year. Had Pro-Life New Zealand had an education day, and it came out of that. So it's been mostly... It started off with most of the young people, university people, and we've extended it out, so it's a very ecumenical bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be good to have some other faith groups also in there.
Oh, it's very much other faith groups, yes. Yeah. There's just two Catholics involved in it.
Yeah, the organisers.
and our minute secretary, but everybody else is all denominations, and I'm pretty sure they're all Christian, but we don't care whether you're Christian or not. We just want you to come along and show your support, because many people aren't Christian, but they still have strong views, and they still are out there to support people, you know.
Well, I think
many of our Muslim community are, yeah.
I think every religion is in favour of life.
Yes, yeah.
And is it the only place where there is a March for Life in New Zealand?
No. Hamilton have got one about a fortnight after us. So if you don't make ours, go along to Hamilton. If you really want to, you could go all the way down to Christchurch at the end of March, I think the 29th of March. And Nelson usually have one as well. Of course, the national one, which is why we've held off announcing ours, because the national one was in Wellington on the... at the beginning of December, and that's the beginning of December every year. And that's just a wonderful event. It's just so full of joy. So, it's a beautiful thing to be a part of. It's really, if you haven't had an opportunity, please come along, because it will warm your heart. If you wanted to watch them on TV, there'll be, you know, hundreds of thousands of people will be marching all over America because it's the anniversary of Roe versus Wade this weekend. So they have marches and hundreds of thousands of people will march.
What kind of weekend is it?
It's the anniversary of the court case, Roe versus Wade. So, so that's where that basically made abortion legal. And it was interesting because the abortion never went ahead anyway in the end. So, and the lady who was involved in the case became a staunch worker for the pro-life cause, and she actually converted to Catholicism. Yeah. So it's interesting. Many of those people, they find peace and healing after an involvement in that life. They find real peace and healing because, you know, it's all about healing in the end, and all of us need healing and a closer walk with God.
And as you say, it's a global concern.
Oh,
it's in most countries in the world. Is it in at least all the Western countries? It is being discussed.
Oh, absolutely! Look, the organisation I work with overseas, we had our national conference last year over by Medjugorje. And when I was studying in Canada a few years ago, there were Aboriginal Indians from Canada, there are people from Nigeria, Kenya, they come from all over the world because this is a global problem, really and truly. There's people in deep heartache all over the world over this.
What do you say to somebody who says, well, we can't do anything anyways?
No. We can all do something. Just one voice. Just one voice. Can I just tell this lovely, beautiful story? The first person I ever heard counselling someone through an abortion decision was my dad, and I was 14, and he was over the phone talking to a young lad in his soccer team, and Dad was telling the boy he'd be a great... Sorry, he wasn't 14. The girl was 14. He was 17. He told him he'd make a great dad. He'd find him a job. All the boys in the team would support him. Well, that... He did. He went on and had a son, and then he had another son. And, you know, you don't have to be a professional to stand by someone and help them. You just need to be someone who reaches out and offers them the hand of love and support and just help them through that time when they're making that crucial decision. Because once they get past that panic, they are usually fine, you know, and they can go on. And the difference between a woman who chose... I've never met a woman who chose to keep her baby and regretted it, but... Likewise, I know many, many, many women who've lived a life of heartache following their abortions. So, you know, definitely there's healing out there and there's some beautiful healing programs. And many of the women who come through those programs, they're like the diamonds coming through the coal. You know, they've suffered and they come out as beautiful people. But it's a hard way to find that peace, you know.
Thank you very much for your work, Catherine. And I hope that many people turn up on Saturday, the 29th of February.
Yeah, I hope so too.
That doesn't happen very often to have a 29th of February, so it's a very unique chance. 2 p.m. at Aotearoa, Square.
Sorry, if we meet at Freiburg Square first at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
And then we march at 2.
1 o'clock and meet there. Okay, thank you very much, Catherine.
Thank you.
And what is coming up in the Mercy Spirituality Centre? Well, our first public event for this year of Presence 2020 is Dreamwork 202, Practicing Dreamwork Skills with Margaret Bowater, Friday the 31st of January from 10 to 1. On Saturday the 15th of February from 9:30 to 3:30, Sarah Cooper will facilitate a retreat day with the title Reconfigured, Transformed by Reality. And on Friday the 21st of February from 10:30 to 12:30, Sister Elizabeth Sneddon is going to present a muffin meeting on the Mystics of Helfta, the Two Mechtels and St. Gertrude. For all events at our centre, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycentre.org.nz. I wish you all a good Friday, a blessed week ahead, and thank you very much, Catherine, for having come here.
Thank you, Beate. See you on the 29th.